compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. Hour three is here, and it'll go by very quickly. So if you've been thinking about calling, call now, 888-914-9149. Also, be sure to take advantage of our brand new offering with the Merry Beggars. These guys are great. They do full-scale productions of just incredible theater of the mind. And right now, they're doing A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, the way it was supposed to be listened to. And you can get your installments by going to relevantradio.com. You'll see information about the Merry Beggars. But throughout Advent, you'll be able to receive installments, fully acted, high production values, very interesting and very edifying. And all you need to do is just go to relevantradio.com to get signed up for that. Let's go back to the phones. Again, the number 888-914-9149. Why don't we go to Mike now, listening in Minnesota. Hi, Mike.
Patrick, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, I'm not sure exactly how to start this. I was raised Catholic, went to a Catholic school, church 6 days a week. And just hearing myself say that, I think I'm going to use that as an excuse now. But in my late teens, with a woman who had an abortion, I was married in the Catholic Church. I'm no longer married. I have two boys and divorced. I've just done things throughout the years, and I just feel like I'm not sure where to go. Based on the laws of the Catholic Church, because of my divorce, I did not get an annulment. I've since been married twice after that. And divorced, promiscuity, pornography, just all of the things that just continue to push me further and further away. I'm not sure where to go. I'm just kind of lost, and I don't know where to start. And I was just hoping maybe you could steer me in a direction and just let whatever happens after that.
Well, a couple questions, Mike. Are you, so you're divorced again. Are you living alone? Do you have any kids with you, or what's your personal situation?
Well, I'm with a woman who's Catholic. She got an annulment from her marriage, but we're not married, but we do live together.
Okay. So, of course, you know that that's wrong, but it's the will to do the right thing that's the hard part right now, as it sounds like.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, what would happen, Mike, if you were to drop dead of a heart attack an hour from now?
Well, I would take my sins with me and not been forgiven.
Where would you go?
I don't know.
Would you go to heaven?
Not immediately.
So you're in the state of grace
right now?
And maybe
not at all. Pardon me?
Are you in the state of grace? Now, I don't mean to be crassly personal, but there's a reason for me asking you these questions. Just given your circumstances, you're living with this woman. Have you been to confession for these things that are troubling you?
I haven't.
Okay. So, to be specific and to be forthright, you're in the state of mortal sin right now. Would that be a fair assumption?
Yes.
Okay. So, if you were to drop dead of a heart attack right after we get off the phone and you just suddenly die, where would you go? Dying in the state of mortal sin?
To hell.
Mm-hmm. Now, the next question is, do you want to go to hell?
Absolutely not.
Right. So then the next question is, then what are you waiting for? I mean, why not fix the problem? Because life is uncertain, and none of us knows when we'll die. We all hope to live a long life. I do, but maybe I won't. And often death comes suddenly without any time to prepare. And if it came for you right now or 5 minutes after we hang up the phone, as you yourself know, you would go straight to hell. And since you don't want to go to hell, and you have the remedy to save you from that, what's preventing you from taking that medicine and getting out of the state of mortal sin?
Myself? I mean, just, I can't get out of my own way. I can't seem to do the right thing, and I want to. And
what's stopping you?
Satan?
Maybe. But he kind of has you right where he wants you, so he doesn't have to really lift a finger at this point. You're exactly already where he wants you to be. So I would think it's more you than him. And if you really desire God and the things of God, and if you really don't want to go to hell, you have to rouse yourself to get out of the situation that has you on your way to hell. And first of all, you need to leave this woman. She's not your wife. You have no right to live with her. She has no right to live with you as husband and wife. So if you want my advice, and I mean you do because you're calling me, pack your bags and leave. And you may say, oh, that's so harsh. Well, which is more harsh, packing your bags and leaving or going to hell? I mean, that's permanent harsh. That's forever harsh. That'd be the first thing I'd recommend, is get up and go. Go get an apartment, or if that's where you live and she's, you know, living with you, then I'm sorry, but I can't do this anymore. You'll have to leave. So these are decisions you'd have to make on your own, and you have to determine how to do them. But Jesus talked about this. He says, you know, if your eye causes you to sin, or your foot causes you to sin, or your hand causes you to sin, pluck it out or cut it off, or it's better to go into eternal life without your eye or your hand or your foot than it is to be thrown into the fires of hell with your eye and your hand and your foot. Now, it's a figurative statement, but it applies here, certainly. You enjoy the pleasure of this relationship. You enjoy all the benefits of it, but they're illicit and they don't belong to you. And would it be awkward or painful or embarrassing to have to cut it off? Yeah, yeah. But as Jesus said, if you don't, you go to hell, and you don't want to go there. None of us does. But you have to have the will to say no to this and say yes to the Lord. You have to have the will to repent and receive his forgiveness. And until you have that, I mean, only you can do that with God's grace. I'm happy to be here to offer you some counsel, and I appreciate you having confidence in me, Mike, to ask my opinion on this. So please don't misunderstand my forthrightness as being brutal or anything, but you're really up against the wall here. And if you were to die, you're going to go to hell. So please don't do that. Don't go to hell. Do the right thing and take the steps you have to take, and one foot in front of the other, and you keep going, and God will help you. And I'm here to help you. All of us here at Relevant Radio are here to help you. But ultimately, only you can do it. You have to make that first step.
Okay, understood.
Yeah. But you can do it. You can do it. You know how the second commandment...
That was the reason why I called, and again, and not... but yeah, I understand.
Yeah. I don't know where in Minnesota you are. It doesn't matter, but chances are you're not far from a Catholic church. And if you were to go to a Catholic parish or go to the website and make contact, you could go to confession today and get right with God today, get out of mortal sin. Now, you have to be truly sorry for your sins. It doesn't mean that you know, we're all weak, so it doesn't mean like you know that forever you'll never, ever commit a sin again, but rather you have what's called a firm purpose of amendment. Lord, I don't want to fall into sin again. I want to love you, and I want to stay close to you, and please help me to do that. And if I fall, I know you'll help me get back up again. But you need to repent. I mean, repentance is something from the heart. Ask the Lord to give you the grace of repentance. It's not an emotional feeling. It's an act of the will, where you look at this with your, you know, the clarity of the full light of day, and you say, I know what I'm doing is wrong. I really, really want to be with you, Lord, but this is hard for me to leave this relationship and the other things that I've been doing. But I want you more than I want them. and I'm truly sorry, Lord, please forgive me. He will forgive you. And when you go to confession, you'll know that you've been forgiven because you'll hear those blessed words of absolution that the priest will pronounce you. And be sure to make a really good confession. Don't leave anything out. However long it's been since your last confession, even if it's been years ago, if you've committed adultery 1,000 times, say, I committed adultery 1,000 times. If you did pornography and masturbation-related sins are 1,000,000 times, say, I did these sins 1,000,000 times. You know, your best estimate. Don't leave anything out. Do a good inventory of your sins before you go in and get it all out there, even if it takes 30 minutes, whatever it takes, get it all out there. Be honest with God. Be honest with yourself. Don't leave anything out. Be truly sorry. Have a firm purpose of amendment. Lord, with your help, I'm not going to do this again. I'm weak and I need your help, but I'm willing to make this change. And then when you walk out of that confessional, you're a free man. And if you were to die of a heart attack, you go straight to heaven. Maybe some time in purgatory, perhaps, but you would be on your way to heaven. And then you just work that plan. You just work it and work it and work it. And you stay close to Jesus and you pray the rosary. And you don't live with that woman, and you don't turn on the porn on your phone or your laptop or wherever you see it, and you don't go to the places or hang out with the people or do the things that have drawn you into sin. You've got to cut all that off. You have to be ruthless in cutting all that off. Otherwise, it's like gangrene. It'll kill you. If you don't cut it out, it'll kill you. But you can do it.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much.
All right. You're welcome. Hang in there. You can do this. Ask your guardian angel to help you and pray for you. And as soon as you can, start making these changes. Make them today. I mean, you can make them today. There's nothing preventing you. Set your face like flint. You know, square your jaw and move forward. And God will help you.
Thanks for your time.
God bless you. There's a book I'd like to share with all of you. It's called The Courage to Be Chaste. This gentleman that you were just hearing me talk with, he's probably not unlike a lot of people out there who have a real difficult time with pornography and, you know, unchastity. Unchastity, again, I know I've talked about it before, but it's worth listening to again. Chastity is the way you govern your body when it comes to sexual activity. Purity is the way you govern your mind. And the two go together. If you're impure of mind, chances are you're going to be unchaste physically. And you can't be unchaste and pure of mind. They're incompatible. So this book that I just referenced, The Courage to Be Chaste by the late Father Benedict Rochelle, is not only a clinical assessment of how we can find ourselves trapped by addiction, sexual addiction of various forms, but also how to get out of it. So it's a spiritual and clinical psychology, because he was a clinical psychologist, he had his doctorate in psychology. So he had the training and the experience, but he was also a wise Catholic priest. So bringing the two to bear in this book called The Courage to Be Chaste is, I have found to be a very helpful book, because a lot of people find themselves in this trap, and they have no idea how to get out of it. How do I stop doing this? How do I break the syndrome? How do I deal with these powerful feelings and urges that I get that I previously was not able to control? How do I do that? Well, you can do it. And it, you know, does take work. It does take effort, but it can be done. And ultimately, unless the person is willing to do it, it will never happen. It's like being in a prison cell and you have the key in your hand. And all you have to do is walk over to that door and turn the key and walk out. And I know it sounds like, wow, it's just, how could it be that easy? Well, it actually is, in a certain sense, that easy. If you're in that prison cell of lust and pornography and all the other things that go along with these issues, it's like being in a prison cell, but you have the key and you can turn it and you can walk out. The problem is wanting to do that. You know, as St. Augustine said so famously, Lord, make me chaste, but not yet. I still want to fool around a little bit. I still want to have a few more adventures. But eventually, Lord, I'd like you to make me chaste, because I know that ultimately I really would like to be chaste. But right now, can you just let me have a little more fun? And of course, St. Augustine rolled his eyes at his own words later on. You know, just the silliness of saying, Lord, make me chaste, but not yet. But eventually, the Lord helped him to escape from that trap. He was in the same trap. And he talks about it in his book, The Confessions. Read that book. Everybody read that book. It is such a great book. And you're going to see yourself in various ways in the pages of The Confessions of St. Augustine. And in his case, it all started when he was about 15 years old. It all started when he stole some pears. He was with a couple of his buddies, and they were out, and a neighboring farmer had delicious ripe pears on the tree, and Augustine and his buddies, you know, yucking it up, and isn't this fun, and they stole a bunch of pears. And that's, he kind of marks that as that's where his descent into sin really began. And after stealing the pears, he went from the next thing and the next thing, and of course, at that time of your life, as you're just beginning to become aware of your bodily powers, it didn't take long before he was in, you know, in the midst of sex, drugs, and rock and roll of the fourth century version. And he describes how for many years he was just up to his eyeballs in sexual, illicit sexual activity. Now, he doesn't describe it in a way that would make you blush. I mean, don't misunderstand. He doesn't inflame the imagination. He doesn't describe things that would make you, you know, fall into sin. But he does say very clearly what he went through and how he very nearly didn't get out of it. But he did. And that's the key. That's the main thing, is that the Lord will help you. You just have to want him to. You have to be willing to let him help you. I'll leave it at that. But this is a very important topic that touches on the lives of so many people. And if maybe this doesn't apply to you, but it does to somebody that you know and care about, maybe go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and grab the link to this hour, and then send that link to somebody in your life who might be struggling with sexual addiction. This might help them. I'll be right back. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep our stations running. Join in with hundreds of other listeners who have donated their used vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Okay, I want to share with you that article I promised I would. Then we're going to go back to the phones. This is by the Associated Press. Interesting. Not real news. A look at what didn't happen last week. So it goes through a series of things that were sort of popularized in various media outlets. So, for example, falsely claimed that vaccinated American Airlines pilots died in flight. So the claim is that in two recent incidents during flights departing from the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, American Airlines pilots died from myocarditis caused by the COVID-19 vaccine. The facts are the following. These incidents did not happen. A spokesperson for American Airlines confirmed in an email to the Associated Press, thousands of social media users last week shared a fear-mongering article that falsely claimed that it provided evidence for why vaxxed pilots should not fly. The article shared two examples of incidents that it said took place on American Airlines flights traveling from DFW to Fort Myers, Florida, and one from DFW to Los Angeles. It claimed that one pilot experienced cardiac arrest in flight and the other started convulsing and vomiting in flight, and both died before the planes landed. The article contributed both deaths to myocarditis and inflammation of the heart muscle that has been linked rarely to, I'm reading the AP copy here, has been linked to the COVID-19 vaccines. It said both pilots had recently received their second COVID-19 vaccine doses. In a final claim attributed to an anonymous source, the article said that there had been at least 12 non-fatal incidents involving pilots that had recently taken the jab. These claims are all false, according to American Airlines spokesman or spokesperson Whitney Zastro. This was confirmed by email. An internet search reveals that the claim surfaced last month on Real Raw News, a website that includes a disclaimer that it contains humor, parody, and satire. A similar story floated last month, also falsely claimed that a Delta Airlines pilot who had recently been vaccinated died in flight. Both Delta and the Federal Aviation Administration confirmed that there were no such incidents matching this description. Another example, a priest in a widely shared video collapsed but did not die. The claim is a video shows a Catholic priest who had been vaccinated against COVID-19 suddenly dying during a live stream. The facts are these. The priest did collapse while celebrating Mass, but he did not die. According to a Facebook video posted by a church in Acapulco, Mexico, the priest who stood in front of the congregation the following day, and then again later in the month, showed that he did not die. Additional videos from the church also showed this. Social media posts falsely claimed that a minute-long video clip showed the priest abruptly dying from the vaccine side effects while leading a religious service. The clip of the priest collapsing has circulated online since at least September the 3rd and has appeared all over the place. They give a lot of examples of where this was. In the video, the priest addresses the congregation in Spanish, referring to yesterday's incident. This is the other video that shows that he didn't die. He thanks God for the fact that he is standing, and he says that he, on the recommendation of doctors, will take a few days off to see what is going on with his health. So long story short, the video that was circulating saying that this priest collapsed and died after the COVID-19 vaccine is not true. Another one, and I had heard about this a few days ago, that Nancy Pelosi has purchased a $25 million home in Florida. The facts are these. Pelosi's office said that there is no such pending sale. The brokers that listed the property also confirmed that the buyer is not the Speaker of the House. Various posts spread quickly on Facebook and Twitter, claiming to show a photo of a $25 million home in Florida that Pelosi purchased. The photo comes from a listing for an oceanfront 10,000 square foot property on Jupiter Island. A Pelosi spokesman said the claim is false. He denied that she's considering moving to Florida. He says this is inaccurate. Beth Bork, owner of Southern Shore Properties, the brokerage that listed the property, said that the house is under contract and confirmed that the buyer is not Nancy Pelosi or her family.
So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
Pipe down.
Good morning.
Just pipe
Sunday
down.
Morning.
Just pipe down. It's a rumor that's been floating around. It's gotten bigger and bigger, etc. Here's another one. Fox News banned in the UK. Not true. The claim is that Fox News was banned from operating in the United Kingdom for promoting right-wing propaganda. The facts are these. UK regulators did not ban Fox News from operating in the region. Fox News voluntarily stopped broadcasting in the UK in 2017 after failing to cultivate a sufficient audience. Posts claiming that Fox News was banned from the UK for being propaganda have circulated widely on Twitter, but these claims are false, according both to the UK government and Fox News and its parent company, 20th Century Fox, and it goes on and on and on in that vein. So I'm sure there were plenty of people who thought that was really cool. It's not true. Let's see.
I don't want that on my karmic record.
No, I really don't.
No, you really don't. So I think that's representative enough of some of the things that people, you know, they become convinced of it, and turns out it's not true. So I thought you'd want to know. Let's go to Joseph in Oak Lawn, Illinois. Good morning, Joseph.
Morning, and thanks for taking my call. I was married, and I found out, this is years ago, I was married in 93. I found out 8 months prior to that, or so, 6 or 8 months, that my fiance at the time had an abortion years earlier. I went forward with the marriage, and I was devastated because I found that out by accident. I wasn't supposed to, but I did, and I still married. We're divorced. She had cervical cancer. We were not able to have children. She remarried since. I have not. So my question is, based on what you say about annulment, this would not give me a reason to annul the marriage because I was aware of the abortion prior to my marriage. Is that accurate?
That part seems to me, yes. So if you had, okay. If this had been concealed from you and you found out about it only after the marriage, then that would.
Before I found out before
that.
I was married. Sorry.
I understand that. All I'm saying is that if you had found out about it afterward, that would be grounds for an annulment as I understand it. But in your case, no. However, if she was willing to conceal this issue from you, it's possible that there may be other things that she concealed from you that you didn't know about and you may still not know about. So if you are wondering about remarrying and whether or not you can remarry, I would encourage you to go through the annulment process just to find out, because where there's smoke, there's fire. And my assumption is that if this one thing was concealed, there may be other issues there that might come to light. So it would be worth your while, it seems to me, to initiate the annulment process and see what comes of it, see what they find out. And there may be more.
You know, I'm not thinking about getting married again. I'd rather just marry the church and just go that route. But I was just curious as to if there were anything, you know, if I ever do meet. I'm not looking. I'm not really interested in that. But I was just wondering if there was something. Now, in her case, she did get remarried. And I tried to tell her, I said, you know, go and talk to someone and find out the reality of it. Many years ago, about 4 years ago, when I came back with God, and I didn't get a response on that. So I pretty much, I can't do anything about that. But as far as me, you say, if I do find someone, then maybe go through the annulment process and see where there's smoke, there is fire. I never thought of it that way, that there would be perhaps more, but I guess there could be. So, yeah.
There could be, yeah. I mean, only the church really is in a position to help you determine that, but I think there's good reason to do so. Even if you never wind up getting married again, at least you have that peace of mind of knowing where things stand. And that'd be a good incentive to pray for her, that she would get to the point where she's sorry for what has happened and she would take the steps to get in the state of grace.
And what's my culpability, knowing that she did have an abortion? I still went to church, in a Catholic church. We were married. The marriage was a disaster, probably because of that and all other reasons of sin. But where does that stand for me? How much trouble am I in for getting married in the church?
I don't think any. If you knew, I mean, you did. You knew that she had committed, she had an abortion, and yet you loved her enough to say, if God forgives you, I forgive you. I'm willing to love you as my wife, and I'm willing to let that be behind us. And you went into marriage with those noble intentions. You didn't do anything wrong. So, you did something heroic, even by being willing to overlook this terrible sin and love her. I mean, I'm assuming too much. I assume that she probably went to confession after that, and she was sorry for it.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I don't even know, sir, if she did go to confession. I know we didn't take it seriously. I know there's weeks of preparation, and we waited till, I think it was one meeting with the priest, and there was maybe 50 people in the room. I didn't go to confession, and I don't know if she did. I don't think she did. I could be wrong. I never asked her. I wasn't where I am now then, and it's a total reversal of what I was.
Understandable. I think a lot of people can relate to that. I can relate to that in a certain sense, maybe not quite as dramatically, but I think what you're saying is an example of how the older you get, the wiser you become, and you make decisions that are different from what you did before. But at least with regard to your question a moment ago, you didn't do anything wrong by marrying her in good faith, out of love and a desire to build a life with her. There's nothing simple about that. And it seems even heroic to me that, knowing her background, you were still willing to say, I still love you and I still want to live with you. So I don't see any problem, as far as you're concerned, in that area.
Well, that's been on my mind for a while, and I really appreciate that. And I will process the annulment now based on what you told me, because that's a good idea. I thought I was in big trouble, and I confessed of all the sins, and I thought I was in big trouble. So,
well, one final thought here.
Really good, sort of. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad. I feel the relief in your voice, or I can hear it.
Oh,
just remember that although our conversations are, you know, really good, and I'm happy to know they're helpful, it's obviously not confession. So, to ease your conscience, just say, when you go to confession next time, And for a long time, I've been burdened by this thought that I had done something sinful by marrying this woman under these circumstances. And a person I asked some advice from said that I did not do anything wrong or sinful. And just for the sake of it, Father, I want to mention this in confession so I can leave this at the foot of the cross and know with certitude that, you know, I don't have to have anything on my conscience about this issue. And he'll understand.
Boy, that's good. That's helpful very much.
Good,
and I appreciate it very much. You've been an inspiration to me, and you brought me a long way, my friend. So is the station, Relevant Radio, and it's really an awesome and joyful thing that I never understood before. But
thank you.
Now I do. Thank you.
That makes me very happy. Very happy indeed. Well, thank you, Joseph. God bless you, and go in peace. Let's take a break and come right back to more of your phone calls. We'll ride that wave until the end of the hour. So if you want to jump in, the number is 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Real life solutions you can believe in. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
Cyrus, check this out. This is something I talked about, I think, while you were on vacation. Your sick vacation, because you spent your vacation sick earlier this week. Yeah, lucky you. Well, I talked... it wasn't yesterday. It might have been the day before, about the incident. You'll remember this, where a few years ago, we were doing the show, and I was talking about how your phone listens to you.
You know it. And
sends back to the mothership. Okay. And I was doing a story about that. It might have been from Tech Review or something like that. And then later in the same show, a lady called up and asked a question about... cosmetic surgery for excess skin removal. And she said, in the case of somebody who was, you know, extremely overweight, lost a lot of weight, and then had the saggy baggy excess skin, is it morally okay, she asked, to go to cosmetic surgery to have the excess skin removed? And I said, yeah, it's moral. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. If it's a legitimate medical treatment and there's reason to do it, you know, and your intentions are proper, yeah, there's no problem with that at all. Okay, so that call came and went. Do you remember that particular show?
Yes.
This may remind you.
Yeah, okay. I love this topic too, because our phones are always listening.
Always listening. So here's what happened. So later in that same show, maybe 15 minutes later, another woman calls up. She says, hey, check it out. I've just been listening to the show on my phone on the Relevant Radio app, and I heard, you know, you talking earlier in the hour about how the phones listen, and it's like, okay, that's interesting. And then I heard the call about the lady who wondered if it was moral to get cosmetic surgery for excess skin removal operations. And she said, you'll never guess what happened. She said, within about 15 minutes, my phone started serving up ads for excess skin removal operations. And I remember our reaction was the same. It was like shock and awe. Like, you know, this is proof in real time.
It's real.
That, yeah, it's real. Okay, so fast forward to this morning. I get a text from a friend of mine. And he says, I just saw an ad on YouTube. So he's multitasking. He's listening to the show, probably on his phone, I'm guessing. Or he's listening to the show on the radio, but his phone is there. He says, I just saw an ad on YouTube for virtual real estate. Now, what were you and I talking about?
We were just talking about virtual real estate.
Virtual real estate. Now, this guy, I know him well. He's not a kind of guy who's ever going to be looking for virtual real estate.
Right.
He's probably never going to set foot in the metaverse. He couldn't care less, as far as I'm aware, of anything like that. So it's not as though he was... you know, like looking online for virtual real estate. His phone heard me talking about virtual real estate on the metaverse, and now YouTube is serving up ads to him.
Weird.
See?
I'm just opening my YouTube right listen. Now. I'm just to see what's up there, and it's all Star Wars and JFK magic bullets.
An excess skin removal operation.
Not yet. Not yet. I'm scrolling. I don't see it. So it hasn't happened to me this time. But that doesn't
mean. And
this
is why I keep telling you, this is why I leave my phone in my car when I go to confession. My phone's not going in there with me. And I hope the priest leaves his phone in the rectory. All right, let's get back to the phones. Let's go to, let's see. Let's go to Lisa in Illinois. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Patrick. My question has to do with mortal sin. Those that are not believers have faith in God. The priest explains mortal sin, saying you have to have full knowledge to commit a mortal sin. Now, these people that are ignorant to God, that are not faithful people, and they don't have that full knowledge, how are they being held responsible for their sins?
Well, you don't have to be Catholic to have full knowledge. I understand your question, Melissa. It's a good one. But you don't have to have full knowledge, like theological precision, to know that murder is wrong, or adultery, or theft, or lying, or, I mean, St. Paul says that these laws of God are written into the human heart. So whoever you are, wherever you are, we have at least a basic foundational understanding that certain things are wrong. So we don't have to have textbook knowledge, or we don't have to have catechism knowledge that these things are wrong. So go ahead.
More along the lines of, like, I'll even have Catholic friends that have gone to church, you know, throughout their lives, but never having realized that not going to Sunday Mass is a mortal sin. So not having that full knowledge, what would happen if they dropped dead the next day?
Well, this is where God would take into account their ignorance on the topic. So God understands that if you don't know that something is wrong because you never learned it, and maybe this was a bit more subtle and it you just didn't realize that there was something wrong with this, God certainly takes that into account. And so one's culpability, which is the term that's used when it comes to guilt, what is your level of guilt? Are you culpable for something? Well, you may be culpable, but in a very diminished way, compared to, say, if you, Lisa, and by the way, sorry for calling you Melissa, if you, Lisa, or I, with much, much clearer understanding of these issues, if you or I did this, you know, we would be culpable to the max because we know better. But if you have somebody who's ignorant, and especially if it's through no fault of his own, then that even further lessens one's culpability. And then the other thing is, you can be guilty of a sin in a material sense. In other words, you did something that is truly wrong, but because of your ignorance, maybe your culpability is greatly diminished. So in a formal sense, you may not be formally guilty of the mortal sin, even if materially what you did was a mortal sin. God takes all these things into account.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does that
Thank
help?
Thank you. I appreciate your help. Yes.
You're most welcome. Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you. Let's go to Melissa now. And that's why I called Lisa Melissa. Good morning, Melissa in Fresno. Welcome.
Good morning. I heard it too. I heard Melissa. I said, hey, he's talking to me. I do have a question, and it's coming from a lot of the calls that you had today. Will we ever be responsible for someone else's sins?
We can be, sure. Maybe one of the most basic examples would be if you entice somebody into committing a sin. So let's say it's a sexual sin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not necessarily speaking about you personally, but I'm saying you rhetorically. If you seduce somebody, you're definitely implicated in that sin. If you encourage somebody to tell a lie, or if you encourage somebody to do something that is wrong, you are participating in that sin.
Okay, so if I drive someone to the abortion clinic.
Indeed. Yes, it's like driving the getaway car for a bank robbery. You didn't go into the bank and rob it, but you drove the getaway car, so you are just as guilty as the people who went in and robbed the bank.
So if you have no part in it, but you know that someone's, like, let's say, living in a state of sin, like, and it doesn't necessarily have to be like my children, but maybe like my best friend's kids who are not married, living together. If I don't say anything, is there part sin in that, or is there no sin?
No sin, because in a case like that, number one, you have no standing. You're not obliged to intervene in that person's life. Now, if you're at a dinner party and sitting next to the person and he says, oh, by the way, I'm living with my girlfriend. And, oh, really? You're Catholic? Yeah, I'm Catholic, but I'm living with my girlfriend. Well, don't you know that's a sin? In a case like that, you know, there would be, I think there is a case to be made that if you have an opportunity to give good counsel in a situation where you have some kind of standing, where he's actually telling you about it, yeah, then I would say if you said nothing, that might be, you know, maybe mildly sinful, perhaps. But if it's people you know about across the street, but you don't really know them and you're not related to them, you have no obligation to go knock on their door and tell them you're committing a sin. And if you never said anything to them, you're not committing a sin by saying nothing.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. That is very helpful.
You sound relieved.
I do feel relieved. Yes, there was a lot of calls today that made me think of all of these things that I thought, oh no, I know this person. My kids aren't old enough yet to be there, but I know that if it was my children, they're going to, I mean, I'm already saying things to them now, but someone else's children, I mean, I don't really want to, but it's bothering me. And so I'm like, okay, not bothering me because nosy, but just.
Yeah, you don't want to be the Mrs. Kravitz of the neighborhood, obviously, and, you know, putting your nose in other people's business. If there's some, here's a good rule of thumb. If you have authority over somebody, or you have a responsibility, a duty to help somebody, this would be like, you know, your close family, your children. You definitely have an obligation to give good counsel and to try to help however you can and intervene however you need to. But if it's extended family, that obligation goes way down. If it's neighbors or total strangers, the obligation practically goes away. Except if you're in a situation where they ask you about it. In that case, then you now have been invited into that world and you now have a reason, you have a justification for saying something. Or let's say that you're an employer and you know that one of your employees is, you know, cheating on his taxes, or you know that the employee is doing something that could bring disrepute upon your company. Well, in a case like that, you do have a kind of obligation to say something or to, you know, let that person know you better stop this because it now involves you. But if it's just a random person or a total stranger or the neighbors across the street, you don't have that obligation.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. Very helpful.
You're welcome. I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you, Melissa. God bless you. Let's go now to Louise in California. I'm not sure where in California, but Louise, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My question is, I've recently found out that my marriage was never sacramentally valid. And I'm choosing to stay in the marriage. But I guess what I want to know is how do I validate it so that we can receive those graces.
Okay, good. That's a great attitude. So first of all, how did you find out about this? Was there an annulment process undertaken?
No, my husband confessed after 2 decades of being together that he was never faithful prior to the marriage and during our marriage. And
Okay.
He also confessed having taken a woman that he got pregnant to have an abortion.
This must be incredibly painful for you.
It's very, very painful. He's been living a double life. And for many months, I wasn't really sure what to do, but I believe in the sacrament of marriage and always have been, always have. And I want to please the Lord. And my husband has repented. And I want to be sanctified. I believe that the Lord has prepared me for this my entire life. And I want to be the saint that he's calling me to be. And I want to help my husband get to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But it's devastating to know that it was never sacramentally valid.
Well, let's get to your question that you asked.
Seriously.
I know. I'm so sorry to hear this. My heart goes out to you, Louise. It truly does. You've suffered so much, and I'm so sorry that this happened to you. Well, let me go to the question you asked. Can you get this validated? The answer is yes. So the way to handle it in this case, because you are so heroically and generously willing to accept him again and to continue your marriage, and let's hope and pray that he's serious this time about turning away from all of this stuff. You can have your marriage blessed. You sit down with your parish priest and ask him, you know, how do we do a formal kind of blessing for this marriage? Because it looks as though from what was going on before the marriage is on infidelity and such that we may well not have a valid marriage. How do we make sure this is valid? And he'll show you. You can have the marriage convalidated. And then you'll know that it is valid and you can move forward in that regard. I just really want to take a moment, though, and express my admiration and awe of you. Because you're being so faithful and you are you're putting the Lord first, you're making a very big sacrifice. I'm hopeful that you've gotten good counsel as you've gone along through this, because you know most women would have turned the other direction and said, "You're out of here." So I'm just very much in awe of you, and I admire the fact that you're doing what you're doing. So that's my advice.
Thank you.
I wish I had more time though, Louise. Hang in there, okay?
Thank
Hang in
you.
There.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And talk to your priest. Talk to your priest. He'll help you get your marriage convalidated. God bless you. I'll see you tomorrow.